This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Wednesday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 8:55 a.m. Sonia is taking a break this week, so it's me, Hannah, as a guest host today, and Hank from Resident Frequency Studio will be joining us as another guest host in a little bit. Today on the show, we're going to be first up hearing from May Safe from Free Palestine Melbourne. May was a co-MC at the Palestine rally at the State Library on the 19th of April. The 50th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners Day. She talks about the day and her family history with incarceration in Palestine and some context for today. And then secondly, on today's show, we're going to be hearing from David Shoebridge, who links public housing and militarism, starting with a short history about the Greens from his home state and union action fitting well with our May Day scheme. And then thirdly on the show, we're going to be having a live interview with Paulie Stewart, band member of Painters and Dockers and longtime supporter of the MUA, Maritime Union of Australia. And then we're going to finish off the show with a live interview in the studio with Len Cooper, who is secretary of the Melbourne May Day Committee, with about May Day and the committee's upcoming May Day activities. And then maybe we're going to be hearing from Marion at the end of the show. So we've got a pretty action-packed show today, and stay tuned for the headlines.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty now. One, two, nitty-gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty-gritty, hoo-wee. Right down to the real nitty-gritty.
These are the news headlines for Wednesday, the 29th of April, 2026. Beginning with an update on the war in the Middle East, the New Arab has reported that the three-week ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon is conditional on the Lebanese state creating a concrete plan for disarming Hezbollah. If Lebanon fails to present a plan by May 17th, that would see Hezbollah disarmed in the near future. The US has said it will not restrain Israel's response. Meanwhile, the currently restrained Israeli military has continued to conduct strikes in Lebanon despite the ceasefire agreement in place, including striking eastern Bekaa Valley. And in Iran, the state Hormuz remains closed as negotiations continue to stall, according to Reuters. The most recent proposal that has been reported is an Iranian deal that would see the strait reopen under Iranian control without any further concessions. This deal would effectively mean a humiliation for the United States, but it is reportedly being considered by President Trump. The Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has just finished a visit to Russia and has said that he is, quote-unquote, looking into requests for a new round of negotiations with the US. And staying in the region, the Times of Israel has reported that Ukrainian President Zelensky has publicly threatened Israel with sanctions over claims surrounding the purchasing of stolen grain sold by Russia. Zelensky claims that Israeli authorities have failed to prevent grain taken from the occupied Ukrainian territories being unloaded at Israeli ports, a claim which is denied by Israeli officials. Ukraine is reported to be preparing a sanctions package targeting individuals and entities it suspects are involved in the illegal trade. Israel has already accepted 4 shipments of stolen grain in 2026. And back in Australia, an Australian company known as Lynas Rare Earths is at the centre of a new push by the Pentagon to get reliable access to rare earth minerals that doesn't pass through China. This Australian company operates out of Malaysia and is part of a growing effort to build supply chains for resources which are vital for US military that avoid China's dominance over in the rare earth sector. Previously, Lynas sold unrefined heavy rare earths to China for processing, leaving the Pentagon exposed when China placed export bans on certain rare earths vital for US military during last year's quote-unquote trade war. With a new heavy rare earths processing facility being completed in Malaysia, the Pentagon can now buy rare earths directly from an Australian company. These rare earths are vital for the building of high-tech weaponry, including jet fighters and missiles, the sorts of weapons US will be desperately trying to replace if full-scale conflict resumes with Iran. The Pentagon announced a deal with Lynas last month worth $96 million to purchase rare earths. And an update on the King. King Charles has arrived in the US along with his wife, Queen Camilla, for a state visit. The King is expected to address the United States Congress and attend a state dinner as a guest of honor. The visit comes at a moment of increased tension between the US and the UK due to the UK's reluctance to become directly involved with the fight in Iran. Donald Trump has lashed out at many countries, including Australia, for a lack of involvement in the war that he started, but the UK has been a particular target for his dissatisfaction. A visit from the British monarch is expected to involve efforts to bring the countries back together. These have been the news headlines for Wednesday, the 29th of April, 2026. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast here on Community Radio, 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
Not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
You're listening to Wednesday Breakfast on 3CR at 8:55 AM. First up today, we're going to hear from May Safe from Free Palestine Melbourne. May was a co-MC at the Palestine rally at the State Library on Sunday, the 19th of April 2026, the 50th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners' Day. She talks about the day and her family history with incarceration in Palestine and some context for today. A content warning for listeners: the next 10 minutes contain some strong content about sexual and physical violence perpetrated by the Israeli military. Please take care while listening, and if this raises any concerns and you need someone to talk to, you can call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or Lifeline at 131412.
We still have Indigenous people being murdered in prison systems right now, but we also see a over-incarceration and representation of Indigenous people in prison here in this country. And there is a reason because of this. There is a systematic nature in which Indigenous people are targeted. And we see that in Palestine. So, and we come out in solidarity. We recognize our Indigenous brothers and sisters, that this land was never ceded. And we pay our respects to the elders past and present and emerging. And always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Always was, always will be
Aboriginal land.
Always was, always will be
Aboriginal land.
For Palestinians, we are the Indigenous population of that land. And because we are the Indigenous population, we have been subjected to extreme violence. The world is finally seeing the type of violence that Palestinians experience under the Israeli state on its screens, in its social media feed. This has not been the case for decades and decades. As a Palestinian woman, I have a long history of family members incarcerated. I have family lore stories of Palestinian, my own uncles and great-great-grandfather and great-uncles fighting the British, resisting British oppression, leading the revolt in 1936, and being incarcerated and arrested because they were fighting for their own liberation. We have stories of our own families who were incarcerated in 1948, if not murdered, in 1967, in 1971, 73, 76, in the first Intifada, in the second Intifada, and the current regime under the apartheid state. There is not one Palestinian who has not experienced the story of their own family members arrested. I talk about sometimes my grandfather when I come out onto the stage, because it's one of the most important people who was formative in my understanding of what it means to be Palestinian. My grandfather was a political prisoner. He was incarcerated by the State of Israel because he refused to silence his voice. They arrested him on the charge of inciting dissent against the State of Israel. And his idea of dissent was writing for freedom, helping organize community collectives for Palestinian prisoners and youth being targeted by the Israeli state during the First Intifada. For those of you who may not know, the First Intifada was the first example of Palestinian civil resistance against the State of Israel, where it was a spontaneous emergence of everyday people standing against the state. People had had enough, and things were extremely violent in that point. We were heavily incarcerated, controlled, not allowed to move between our towns. Quite a few of us had been expelled. And there was an upswelling within people themselves against this. It was particularly poignant because, I don't know if some of you know, but April 17th in 1974 is the day where Palestinian prisoners were held in custody. And it was the first time that Palestinians were released in a prisoner exchange with the State of Israel. And so we commemorate it every year. But Palestinians have continued having to have our families incarcerated and fighting for them to be released. So my grandfather happened to be one of the people arrested during the Second Intifada as a political prisoner. And he happened to also be one of the people who, during the Oslo Accords, was released in part of the prisoner exchange system. And the only reason he was released was because he was so sick that they weren't expecting him to survive anyway for much longer due to their inhumane treatment of him and every prisoner. The reason I mention this is because it has not changed. It hasn't changed if it's only gotten worse. Right now we have over 9,700 Palestinians abducted. And we use the language abducted because the majority of Palestinians in those prison systems have no charge. They're being held for months, even years, without charge. They're being held and tried through military courts, through a system that 99% of the time rules against them and incarcerates them. They incarcerate children, they incarcerate women and young men and old men. They do not discriminate. There are currently over 350 children in Israel's prison, military prisons, who have no charge against them and being held. And one of the most concerning we hear coming out of it, and this is something when you have family members who've been incarcerated, so just so you're aware, every single one of my uncle has been incarcerated on my mother and father's side. My own father was incarcerated. My grandfather was incarcerated. My cousins have been incarcerated. At least four of my cousins were incarcerated when they were children. This is a very well experience for a very well-known experience for Palestinians. Over 40% of the civilian population has been incarcerated, just to make this very clear. So when we talk about Palestinian prisons, we don't talk about it like it's a cultural shame, like it's something we should be ashamed about, that you have family in prison. We talk about it as an experience of resistance, because that is what the state does. It targets you. You have a voice, it targets you. They think you may have a voice, they target you. It does not matter. They do not discriminate. So when we stand up here today, we stand up in pride for our families and our members and our community. But right now, the stories that are coming out from our families and from within the news is horrifying. We've known that the Israeli state uses sexual violence and rape and torture against Palestinian prisoners. We've known these stories. But the rate in which they have now institutionalized the use of rape and the use of sexual violence and torture against innocent civilians has expanded and exploded in the last 2-3 years. Out of the 59 prisoners that were released recently, 57 of them reported that they were sexually assaulted and raped. 57 of the 59. And when we talk about that, we're talking about men and women soldiers engaging in sexual violence and torture. We recently had a young child who had been tortured by an Israeli soldier where cigarette burns were lit out onto their body. A toddler, a child, a baby. The Israeli state looks at us as if we're subhuman, that our bodies are expendable. And now as Israel has passed its recent law that they're approving the hanging and execution of Palestinian prisoners. Let's understand what that means. There is no due process. As we said, it's an apartheid system. A military court rules you. A lot of the time, these decisions are made in under 30 minutes. You do not have proper representation. Most of the time, it's in a language you do not understand. And Israel has said that they will hang us in the Knesset. They sat there and celebrated the fact that they will be murdering and executing innocent civilians. who they have abducted. And our government has said nothing, absolutely nothing. We have Palestinians, like for example, Marwan Barghouti, a very famous Palestinian political prisoner, who has been recently stories emerging that he's been targeted and beaten up and denied medical aid in the prison system, who's been incarcerated for 23 years. It's people like that who will be the victims of Israel's new law. And we are consistently victims of the Israeli state, whether it's through their genocide in Gaza, their ethnic cleansing in the West Bank, their occupation, their annexation, their apartheid system. We're consistently forced and being their victims. But you will find, as Palestinians, that we don't accept that narrative. We are not your victim. So you may incarcerate our bodies, you may shackle us, you may torture us, but that has not stopped us from resisting and speaking out. They may hold our bodies, but they cannot control our minds, our heart, our will, our solidarity, our resistance. You cannot control that. So when you stand with Palestine, think about those prisoners, those abductees. Think about them, because they are also resisting the Israeli state. They are trying to survive. And that is something the Israeli state tries to control. Your very human will to survive. We see that in Gaza very, very clearly. And do not think this is not happening in the West Bank. It is. Now Palestinians cannot even access their lands for the yearly harvest. They haven't been able to for years. My own family hasn't been able to access their land for the last 10 years. They put a fence across it that we can't cross. And if we try to cross it, they'll shoot us.
Shame.
Every aspect of our lives is controlled by them, and yet, when you talk to a Palestinian, they look at what's happening out here in Melbourne and around the world. They hear that we have people in solidarity with us, that people come out into the streets. And I know it has been 3 years of us coming out almost weekly. And yet we see the goodwill of every single one of you, unfazed, and we're inspired by it. So when I speak to my family tonight and I talk to them about this protest, I will tell them that people came out yet again, and they weren't silent, and they weren't cowed, and they heard our stories. So please, if you'd like to hear about, for example, Marwan Barghouti, please jump on the Free Palestine Melbourne page. We have a campaign for him, particularly, but also please read up about their stories. There are so many, and I'm not going to go through their names right now, because I think it's an onus on every single one of us to actually learn about Palestinians and their stories. I don't want to be here telling you it. I want you to be learning it yourself and come and talk to me about it. Because I would love to learn about my fellow countrymen together with you.
And that was Mai Saif from Free Palestine Melbourne. With her opening speech at the Palestinian Prisoners Day anniversary rally a couple of weeks ago at the State Library of so-called Victoria. You can go to freepalestinevic.org for more information about ongoing struggle for Palestinian prisoners, including Marwan Barghouti.
Oh. And now we're going to be listening to a song from two First Nations warriors from the greater continent of America, Sigweme by Ziwe Cattell and Renata Flores, with a short introduction from the artists in their native language.
Yacharhankichu yakutarpu yatikus hangmanta?
Imanatah kanman.
Kairu hukuna pija mana para kaptinja, yakutan tarpunchik jinas papayan chikpas. Achan hun harunku kai nyaupa yachaita.
Yakuja kausahmi, hun hanchikmi yaku kas hanchikta. Maihin pachapipas mana yakuyu kausaiha kanchu.
Yaku tarpuija kausaita tantanam. Yachachis haiki, hatiwai.
Quiero regresar donde somos, Sabemos lo que es de nosotros. Sígueme, sígueme, ¿dónde vamos? Traemos el mapa en la mano. Voy caminando, yeah, hasta que cae la luna, yeah, hasta que el sol se alumbra, yeah, hasta que el mundo nos escucha, yeah, hasta que el mundo escucha.
Gente de revolución siempre en mis venas. Gente de ríos que fluyen, gente chinampera. Mi gente más fuerte que calor en la frontera. Dentro del agua los balazos no lo encuentran. Y bits son sol chico y catea y cano lloro. Amo no chiniquita y cano chiste loro. Hijo de mi pueblo está bien lejos me espera. Todo lo que tengo es más que el dinero. Si no trae luz no me cura nada. Tan profundo el mundo abajo. Yo espero que tú te escapes. Me dijeron no te pierdas en lo que pase.
¿Dónde somos? Sabemos lo que es de nosotros. Sígueme, sígueme, ¿dónde vamos? Traemos el mapa en la mano. Voy caminando, yeah, hasta que cae la luna, yeah, hasta que el sol se alumbra, yeah, hasta que el mundo nos escucha, yeah, hasta que el mundo escucha.
Siente la fuerza que transmite mi tierra. Es la herencia que dejaron mis abuelas. Esta pollera se mueve y mueve. Siente la música, hace que te eleve. No importa dónde vaya, yo sé de dónde soy. Sigue, sígueme hasta llegar al sol. Los caminos se unen, la profecía se cumple. El cóndor desde el sur, el águila del norte. Turi, ñaña y kuna, japarichkan. No existen las fronteras, aquí chikujas, asachakunchu, uyari chikunchikmi. Pachamama wami, cuya paita canchik. Mi alma conecta con la yakumama. Cuidamos lo que somos, apukuna hayawanchik. Nadie nos calla, aunque estemos en llamas.
Gente de la selva, gente de la sierra. Mi gente callejera bailando en la luna llena. Grita de la calle, vengo del oeste. Mi gente nos espera pa' ponerse de rebelde. Gente de la sierra, mi gente callejera bailando en la luna llena. Mi gente se levanta, no importa lo que pase. Mira la belleza de vivir como salvaje. Oh, quiero regresar donde somos. Sabemos lo que es de nosotros. Sígueme, sígueme donde vamos. Traemos el mapa en la mano. Voy caminando, yeah, hasta que cae la luna.
And that track we just heard was Sigüeme by Renata Flores, who Hank just told me is from Peru.
Yes, well, I was told by somebody else, but yeah, I don't want to take credit. But yeah, that was a really cool song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It means follow me, Sigüeme, in their native language. Yeah, great.
What a beautiful tune on a beautiful Wednesday morning. So up next, 3CR may have heard some of this event already from a public forum called War or Public Housing from Thursday the 16th of April. Next up, we will hear David Shoebridge, who links public housing and militarism, starting with a short history lesson about the Greens from his home state and union action, fitting in well with our May Day theme. Thanks to Annie McLaughlin from Solidarity Breakfast for the recording. And here's David introducing himself now.
I'm David Shoebridge, one of the Green senators elected in New South Wales. I do the work for the party in foreign affairs and defence and justice. And it is a real privilege to be here and to be invited and actually to hear the first three speakers. And hearing Mercedes go through and articulate some of that obscene waste in the defence space and to just give you a sort of lift up the bonnet a bit and have a look underneath about the obscene amount of money that is available for war. I feel really privileged to have heard all three of the contributions. So we'll go on a bit of a journey. Maybe we'll start on a bit of hope, go through a bit of despair, maybe a bit of disbelief, and then maybe try and come back to hope again at the end of the speech. We'll see how that goes. So I'm from New South Wales, proud Sydney sider, and I love coming down here and doing the work in Melbourne and seeing just the depth of the progressive movement down here and the commitment to campaigning on issues like public housing and health and First Nations justice. The work you've done collectively towards treaty, it's a, you know, it's extraordinary important work that happens down here in the progressive left political movement. But I also want to tell you some good stories from Sydney. So I'm a member of the Greens, and many of you may not know the origin story for the Greens in New South Wales, but it really begins in a fight for public housing. And one of my political mentors, who I had the privilege of being a member of the Greens with, was a bloke called Jack Mundy, who was the communist leader of a union called the Building Labourers Federation, the BLs. And in the late 60s and early 70s, he took over the union, much to the resistance of Labor and Sussex Street in New South Wales. And when he took over the union, he had formed a firm view that peace and social justice was a core part of union politics. And at the time, there was a nasty right-wing Liberal government, which was doing policies not dissimilar to what you've seen here in Labor government in Victoria. And it was a smashing of public housing and the intent to smash and remove public housing from the inner city parts of Sydney, and particularly around the Rocks, which is a historic part and was traditionally a very hard core, working class core in Sydney. And the plan was to demolish the Rocks and replace it with a bunch of high-rise private concrete towers. You know, a grand vision from the then Liberal government in New South Wales, for an obscene attack on heritage, an obscene attack on history. But what for Jack, it was an attack on communities and an attack on social housing and public housing and the rights that people had to maintain their communities and live in their homes. And so he began a movement of having the union black ban any demolition or any work to destroy public housing, and got himself arrested, had the union attacked, then began to expand that movement of black banning demolition of public housing to black banning the demolition of urban bushland and black banning the proposal to destroy parts of the Botanic Gardens and Centennial Park for development. And it eventually morphed into this movement called the Green Bans. And the Green Bans was this absolute, you know, unity ticket between the environment movement, the social justice movement and organised labour to protect these beautiful parts of the city and to protect these communities and to protect public housing. And as that developed, it got the attention globally, and a woman came over from Germany and came and saw all this activity happening in Sydney. Her name was Petra Kelly. And then she then trotted back to Germany and began the first ever Greens Party in Germany, taking the inspiration from the Greens Ban movement that she'd seen with Jack Mundy in Sydney. And then it travelled back and became the Greens New South Wales, which has a strong core in social justice and environmental justice. So I want to tell you, this coming together can work. And it saved an incredible amount of public housing in Sydney, saved communities, saved precious parts of our city, inspired a generation or two, including myself, of activists and politicians. But then I did say I'd do a bit of despair. And 45 years after that, that extraordinary achievement of protecting those houses and those homes and those communities, a new Liberal government came in with the active support of the Labor Party in New South Wales and literally sold them out from underneath them. Tore out those communities, tore out those homes, ripped men and women and families who had been living in there the whole of their lives, and has destroyed that part, that history and those communities. And I worked and campaigned alongside many of them, and I know many of them, as particularly the older parts of those communities, as their houses were sold from under them, as their communities were destroyed, as their history was ripped apart, they were relocated to die, and in a sense of despair at what was happening to their communities. This stuff matters. Fighting for communities matters. Fighting for public housing and the right for people to have that connection with where they live and their history. This stuff absolutely matters. I might take that public housing oath and I might take it to our federal party room and get us to recite it once a week. It's an extraordinary achievement because this matters, right? And then following that, we've seen in New South Wales the program that's been spun here, the destruction of public housing, its partial replacement with a tiny smattering of community housing, and the conscious destruction of communities and pockets of resistance. And it is wicked. And everything that Louisa said about your rights in public housing compared to your rights in community housing, the eviction rates are so much higher in community housing than public housing. You don't have that security of tenure. You don't have that guarantee that you'll have your home for life and the adjustments you need to live in it to age in grace in your home. That is all ripped from you, let alone any right to a fair rent that is going to be held in place by the political pressure of it being in public hands and public housing. This stuff absolutely matters. So you keep being told, we keep being told, there's no money for public housing. We have to do this. We have to destroy these houses and then engage in some complex financial arrangement with a bunch of super firms and private equity firms to find the capital to build public housing, because no government's got any money to do this kind of stuff, right? The same party, the Labor Party, who's saying that in Victoria and New South Wales and saying it federally, today that same Labor Party just announced a new updated national defence strategy and trumpeted that they were going to spend an additional $53 billion over the next decade on defence, an additional $53 billion. Money that is being stolen from public services, money that's been stolen from public housing, money that's been stolen from us, and as Mercedes made very clear, is largely going into the pockets of private corporations who sit there like rent seekers, stealing public wealth and redirecting it into the profits and shareholding value of some of the most obscenely wealthy people on the planet. That's what's happening. And behind that, to justify this collective theft from us, we get these political campaigns to manufacture fear in our community. And if any of you had the misfortune, and I know Mercedes did, but if anyone else had the misfortune of watching the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, give his contribution today, he's a man of minimal achievements. He's a man of minimal vision. And I think he's sizing up his post-politics career as a representative of the global arms industry. So I suppose he has some vision, that personal vision in life. But he said, and I'll try and repeat some of it, I'll try not to do it in the same disturbingly deadpan manner of Richard Marles, but he said, look, the world's got very dangerous. There are actors in the world who are ignoring basic concepts of national sovereignty and threatening to invade other countries. There are countries that are ignoring international law and in breach of international law and norms that we've all understood, the rules-based international order that we've all been committed to that keeps countries like Australia safe, is being ravaged and attacked, and therefore we need to go to war with China. He literally said that. He didn't say go to war with China. No, I take the objection from at the back there that this is true. He said we need to work and ensure that we enmesh the United States into our region so that we have a partner to resist Chinese expansion and these terrible actions that China is doing, you know, threatening sovereignty, breaking international law, tearing down the rules-based order. And at no point in this bloke's speech, maybe he doesn't own a TV. Maybe he's not allowed to get data on his phone, I don't know. Because how could you possibly be looking at the world at the moment and seeing the obscenity of the last 12 months of Donald Trump, the United States and Israel threatening to invade Greenland, destroying international law, tearing down the rules-based order, engaging in illegal wars, throwing the entire world's economy into chaos, throwing our lives and our economic lives into chaos, and say, I know my conclusion from the last 12 months. We better double down on AUKUS, buy some more US weapons and try to go to war with China. It is insane, except for it's happening, right? Except for it's happening. And they are planning to redirect $375 billion of our collective wealth into building nuclear submarines to make part of this vision a reality. They're going to war. Because nuclear submarines are not designed to defend Australia. If you want to defend Australia, you do things that work around Australia, right? And the intent of a nuclear submarine is very, the secret sauce for them of a nuclear submarine is that it can travel thousands of kilometres away and, to use a Richard Marles quote, which I hate, engage in impactful projection, right? Impactful projection. It sounds like an adult movie, but impactful projection is his phrase that he keeps using. And what by impactful projection, what he means is, he means he wants the Australian military to be able to engage in the application of force anywhere on the planet. Because he says Australia is a global trading nation. We rely on sea routes we trade with the world. And if we're going to protect our sea routes around the world, we need to be able to project military force anywhere on the planet where our trade is being threatened. That is the most nuts vision for our defence force. We're a country of, what, 27, 28 million? We have a modest, a real but modest manufacturing base. The idea that we can be globally projecting force around the world to protect the sea lanes. I mean, poor old bloody Singapore, what's Singapore going to have to engage in with its global trade? Like, it's an insane proposal that that is what they're intending for our military. But the reason they go through that fiction and they create that fiction and they say this is what we need to be able to have impactful projection and we need to project force anywhere in the world to protect our sea lanes, it's so that they can then take the next step in their argument. And they say, therefore, we need to be allied with the United States and be part of the United States military, have our military interoperable with the United States military to be able to just slot into US global wars wherever they're happening so that we can be part of an alliance which engages in impactful projection anywhere on the planet. And the only way you can square that circle in his brain to engage in global war is by literally inviting and surrendering to and making ourselves a hostage to the United States military. And that's how they square the circle. To engage in impactful projection, to protect our global sea trade, we must be a tiny cog in the US global military war machine. And therefore, we need to spend $375 billion on building nuclear submarines so that we can be a little bit of a contribution to their containment strategy to go to war against China. And that's why we're spending $8 billion building the United States a nuclear submarine base off Perth. Mm-hmm. We're doing it now. We're going to have it up and running by 2027. Yeah. We won't have any nuclear submarines on anyone's strategy by 2027, but we're going to have a nuclear submarine base built by Australian taxpayers up and ready to go just off Perth by 2027. And we could have this discussion about land fighting vehicles. We could have this discussion about Hunter frigates, about Triton drones, about ghost bats and ghost sharks and all this obscene expenditure on US military equipment and this massive transfer of wealth. And we don't have money for public housing. So how do we fight this? How do we find the money for public housing? How do we stop and resist this? Well, the good news is we've got allies in this space. When it comes to the conversation with the Australian public, one of our great allies is Donald Trump, right? You only have to see the guy. You only have to follow his movements. You have to do what Richard Miles doesn't and turn your TV on and watch your social media feed. No one wants to be a part of that. They see him and the United States not as some defender of the rules-based order who we should be inviting into our backyard, but as a bloody menace who we should be stepping away from. And if we want to find ourselves $375 billion to spend on public housing, I've got a good strategy. Let's campaign collectively to end bloody AUKUS, to shut down US bases here, to redirect that funding to the things that matter in our lives. And this is, I wanted to end on hope. This is more achievable than ever before, to distance ourselves from the United States. They are making the argument for us. They are making the argument for us. This insane chaos, this obscene war against the people of Iran, against the people of Lebanon, against the people of Gaza. And I'll tell you this, I have so much more in common. We all have so much more in common with the mum and dad taking their kids to school in Tehran at the moment and wondering if they'll be safe and they'll come home. Mm-hmm. Or the family in Shiraz going to work and wondering if their city will be bombed and they'll be safe on their return. Or the student in Beirut wondering if their flat will be targeted by an Israeli airstrike. Or the 70-year-old woman in Minnesota who's blowing a whistle at ICE and calling into protecting their neighbours. That's who we have in common with. And that's the global solidarity we need to connect to. We have so much more in common with those people around the world than with the likes of Donald Trump or Benjamin Netanyahu or bloody Anthony Albanese or whoever the goon is running the Victorian Labor Party down here in New South Wales. We have so much more in common with those people around the world, and we can build this movement, and we can terminate AUKUS, and we can separate ourselves from the United States, and we can redirect these funds to what matters, and that's why we're here. Thanks very much.
You're listening to the Wednesday Breakfast Show here at 3CR, and that was David Shoebridge, New South Wales Senator and the Greens spokesperson for defence, at a public forum called War or Public Housing in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. He was arguing that the government does indeed have enough funding to pay for adequate and dignified public housing, and talking about Defence Minister Richard Merles to address the press club. Listen in to Solidarity Breakfast this Saturday to hear another presentation from the event, AFR or Acting Up.
I think Welcome to Country is a very dangerous concept and initiative. I really don't know where Welcome to Country even merged from. I know that I don't think it was obviously an Aboriginal initiative. I think obviously governments had introduced that as they were pacifying our flag of resistance. You know, the idealism that lies behind that obviously is so that white people can feel a sense that they're more guests and they've got a right of ownership and to be here. If we're going to continuously welcome them to country, what that does, it rectitudes the fact of the moral racism issues in which they perpetrate against our people. Because how can we be talking about all these other issues and then compromise a hypocrisy in our own selves to welcome these murderers and these slave traders, and this barbaric sense of what they've done to occupy Australia on one hand and welcome them on the other.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
And now we're going to hear a song by the Dilly All-Stars called Liberdade, meaning freedom. The Dilly All-Stars will be playing this Sunday at the Maritime Union of Australia Vic Branch yearly solidarity fundraiser. Stay tuned. You're listening to Wednesday Breakfast with Hank and Hannah on 3CR.
Cara,
You're listening to the Wednesday Breakfast Show here at 3CR, and now joining us is Paulie Stewart, band member with the Painters and Dockers, longtime supporter of MUA and internationalist. And on the line now to discuss MUA's yearly solidarity concert for Timor-Leste. Good morning.
Going?
Hey.
How you going, Hannah and Hank?
Good.
Thanks for reunion. I've just freaked my neighbours out because I've played the Dilly All-Star loud. I think I've woken everybody up in my block of flats. But love the show, guys. There's so many things we could talk about apart from this concert. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us some airtime.
Of
Much
course.
Appreciated.
What a lovely way to wake up for your neighbours.
Yeah, exactly. Let's freak them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to firstly tell us a bit about the band we just heard?
Yeah, that's another band I'm involved in. Mm-hmm. It's both men and women, and it's half the band of Timorese, and half of them are Aussies. And, we've been playing for about 25 years now, promoting Timorese independence all around the world. When we first got involved, the Indonesians were actually still occupying the country, and everybody said, no way will this place ever get its own government and freedom. So hang in there, Palestinian mob. It can happen. And we're the Dilly All-Stars in East Timor. We're living proof that you can, achieve your goals if you stick to it. I must say, in all that time, one of our great supporters being 3CR, and, folks listening in, you've got to support this station because it gives a voice to the voiceless, and you guys have given us lots of airtime over the years to promote our activities, so thanks a lot. And
I really like the way you this is Hank here. I really like the way you connected the Timor-Leste liberation to the possibilities for current struggles. How did you first get involved, if you don't mind asking, with the MUA and the East Timor struggle?
There's two sort of answers to that question. I got involved with Timor because when I was a 15-year-old schoolboy, my older brother Tony was a young journo who went up there to cover the Indonesian invasion. And unfortunately, him and four colleagues were killed up at Balaba, the town in East Timor. So I've got involved, heard about this country for the first time, which I can't believe I'm saying. I've been to 28 times now, and I was an angry young man. So we formed this band called the Painters and Dockers because we were only supposed to do one gig at their pub in Port Melbourne, mm-hmm. where the union members drank, and that has turned into a 40-year career. Because it's too much fun. I keep saying, look, I'll stop doing it when it's not fun, but it's the best fun you can have in the world. I love the Dockers. And
So it started off as just a one-off gig.
Yeah, we were actually, there's a pretty famous band called the Cosmic Psychos, and their drummer Billy Walsh had to pay some parking fine. And so their band was playing, but they needed a support act on. So we said, someone said, oh, Paulie, do you want to join this band for one night? And I said, mate, all I can do is play bad trumpet. And he said, oh, get up and do one song. And I went, oh, okay. Now, this is a true story. People don't believe this. This is a true story. But we got up to do our gig, and the person who lived next door to the pub hated it so much that they jumped the fence with an axe and started chopping up the mixing desk.
Oh, my God.
And at the Painters and Dockers pub, the rule was, you could smoke a big joint on the bar or have a line of speed or walk around in the nude. You could do anything. But the one rule was no cops were allowed on the premises. Good and what right. happened was someone rang the police to report this guy with an axe, and they turned up, and there was an all-in brawl between the Dockers and the police. And I was standing on stage doing the one song I had to do, and I looked out at this scene of madness and confusion and went, I want to do this for the rest of my life. this is, how good is this? And 40 years later, we're still doing it.
Was that your first gig?
Yeah, that was the first kick.
What a start.
They've been just as chaotic ever since, trust me. But, and after playing in the Dockers for a few years, I got to meet some Timorese musicians, and we said, hey, you know, why don't we form a band to promote Timorese independence? And the Dilly All-Stars were born. So
that was before 1999?
Yeah, yeah.
What year was that about?
Oh, I reckon it was about 1993.
We
first got together, and I went up there with Gil Santos, who's my Timorese. I called him the brother that I gained from the one I lost. And in fact, I've probably got about 1,000 Timorese brothers now to replace the one I lost. But we've had the great, you know, fortune of we actually toured Europe as guests of the Portuguese Communist Party, and we've been over to Brazil because that's a former Portuguese colony like Timor. And, I've just fallen in love with Timor, and I urge your listeners, don't go to Bali. Bali's shit. Go to East Timor, you know. There's no drunken Aussie football teams there or people pissing on statues of Buddha. It's a beautiful, beautiful place, fantastic surf and, really cool people.
Well, yeah. you mentioned, so you're involved with a lot of ex-Portuguese colonies.
Yeah.
How would you describe internationalism or how you developed internationalism? Because I hope you don't mind. I noticed that there's a report here that your daughter has some association with the Samud Flotilla as well.
I've always made it's based. I've never set out to sort of be a political activist. I just met these crew who turned into my friends, and they were Timorese, and they were going, and I went, I want to get out, help them, find their freedom, and that sort of just developed. But my daughter grew up and obviously was taking notes without me sort of realising it. But her name's Aretha Brown, and actually, if anyone's ever bought any great 3CR merchandise, she's done all the merchandise for 3CR.
Wow.
And what happened was Greta Thunberg recently heard about Aretha and her stuff, and Greta's organising another flotilla to Palestine, and on one of the yachts, one of the sails is Aretha's artwork.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so that's crazy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one minute she's hassling me to put on the Little Mermaid, next she's involved with bloody Greta Thunberg. Life is a funny thing,
amazing,
ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw all of her artwork with Kneecap and her big artwork recently at the NGV as well.
Yeah, yeah, that was amazing. Up at in Canberra with Vincent Namajira and all these great deadly First Nations artists and... And at the moment, she's on the bloody Gold Coast pitching her ABC comedy show. So I have to make an appointment to catch up with her. She's out of control, you know.
She is. She's a busy girl.
In fact, I'm a bit miffed because I used to be Paulie from the Painters and Dockers. Now I'm Paulie Aretha's dad, you know. Yeah. But no, good on her. I'm really proud of my girl. She's kicking ass.
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome. Do you want to tell us what this fundraiser's for?
Oh, yep, definitely. It's so, you know, the MUA have always, and the FIDA, which is Union Aid Abroad, have always been huge supporters of East Timor. You know, back to the days when, you know, I can remember the first protest I went to in Melbourne, actually, and there were nine of us there, and cars of guys were going past throwing eggs at us, you know, and... But we worked on the campaign with help of people like the MUA and, eventually got independence. But this Sunday, it's to raise money for trade unions up in East Timor. They're setting up unions for all the domestic workers up there. And we've got two really deadly female unionists from Timor are going to be there on Sunday. And... not just the Dilly All-Stars will be playing, but a couple of union bands, Red Envy and the Dalgonines, this beautiful young Timorese guy called Daniel Alfonso. He is, wow, his voice is unbelievable. And opening up the day, we've got Lige Augustine, a great First Nations singer-songwriter who also has a show on 3KMD that you guys would probably know. But
what a great lineup.
Yeah, it should be lots of fun. And the best part of all, folks, the Timorese are providing the catering. Now, if you've never eaten Timorese food, get there because it's bloody delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, people, get down there. It sounds like it's going to be a really good event.
Yeah. And, we'll all be there. We'll all be having fun. And, you know, I still can't believe that, you know, when I first met these Timorese guys and they go, no, we'll get our independence, I thought, nah, they've got rocks in their head, they'll never. How are they going to beat this massive military, you know, force in the Indonesians? But they stuck to their guns and independence. They got their independence, you know. Mm. I do feel a bit pissed off, though, that, you know, all that time I should, what about Australian independence? I keep thinking to myself, when are we going to get rid of the bloody, you know, the pedophile English bloody Windsor family, you know? It's got nothing to do with us. But anyhow, that's my two bobs.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's good to remember that, you know, there are such victories, right?
Absolutely, you know? And all power to, you know, the Palestinian mob. I'm good mates with Laurie Abicata, who runs the Palestinian support group up there in Castlemaine, and he's a family member. So keep fighting, everybody, and just stick to your guns.
Beautiful.
And if you ever want an old punk band to come and play a gig for your benefit, bring in the Dockers. Just don't bring your axes, okay?
Great.
Leave your axes at home. Yeah.
Do you want to, so MUA is obviously affiliates with 3CR on their fortnightly show Fire Up on Thursday mornings. Do you want to talk a bit more about your feelings on community radio here in so-called Australia and abroad?
Oh, look, in the bands I played in, we're not going to get played on commercial radio because the things we sing about, you know, Die Yuppie Die is one of our big songs. They're not going to play that on Nova FM or Triple M. And 3CR have played it many times over the years. I wouldn't have any kind of music career whatsoever if it wasn't for community radio. And, not only here in... actually, listening to the show the other day, I heard that... up in Sydney, there's a great community radio station called 2SER, and a bit like 3CR and Triple R here in Melbourne, you know, they're the only place that would play the Docker Painters and Dockers or the Dilly All-Stars. So, get behind them, folks, and if there's any kind of petition going around, sign it, because they're a great station up there. But, there's great community stations all around Australia, Top 8 FM in Darwin and Triple D in Adelaide and Triple Z, of course. The only number one song we've had on any chart ever in our 40-year career is Die Yuppie Die on Triple Z, Top 100 one playlist. There you go. Long live bloody community radio.
That's a proper chart. That's the community, not some commercial rubbish.
Yeah, that's absolutely, Hank. You know your shit, buddy. I'm really proud that Aretha has picked up and, you know, like, 'cause she gets lots of offers, you know, people wanting to do stuff. But when 3CR rang, she said, oh, no, I'm definitely doing that. And I went, good on you. So, you know, she's out there flying the flag now, so that's really cool.
Yeah, so cool. And to bring it back to the fundraiser, do you want to remind listeners of when that is and what people can expect?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for keeping me back on point, Anna, because I can drift off a bit there, mate.
Love it.
Yeah, look, it's on Sunday, and it's at the MUA's fantastic headquarters in Island 43 Island Street, West Melbourne, which is, other people should consider doing gigs there. It's a great setup. They've got their own stage and PA and a bar there, and everybody's welcome. And it starts off at 3:30. And if you want tickets, ring the MUA Victorian branch. It's probably the best way to get tickets. Just look them up online and give them a holler.
Actually, I think it's 9 3 2 9 5 4 7 7.
Mate, you've got people. Your shit together, Hank. That's exactly right. Come on down, folks, and get up and dance and have some fun and meet some of the Timorese crew. There'll be people visiting from Timor, plus, Melbourne's got a huge Timorese community, and also we're getting a lot of... Recently we went down and did a big gig at Warrnambool, because down at Warrnambool you've got about 1,000 Timorese crew working all the farms down there, because they can't find any Aussies to do the work. So when you hear these fuckwits, One Nation, saying, these people here are coming to take our jobs, well, they're coming here because they can't get anyone to do this work. So, the Timorese are helping keeping Victoria alive, So a lot of that mob will be coming up for it as well. So it's going to be a great day. And there is this great trade unionist, Max Ward, who he's a very good friend of mine, and he will undoubtedly end up on stage at some stage. And I'm telling him right now, Max, leave your pants on, okay? That's my final message. Max, behave yourself, okay?
I'm so excited. That sounds like an amazing gig. Do you want to finish off by maybe giving listeners a message of solidarity for May Day?
Oh, look, absolutely. May Day all around the world is, it's a great day. Celebrate workers and workers' rights and trade unions. I actually do a little bit of work with a lot of refugee mob who come to Melbourne, and I was working a lot with these young African guys, who came from Burundi. And I said, come and do this gig one time on a May Day. It's for the unions. And they said, what's a union? And I said, well, it's when, all the workers get together and you tell the bosses what you want. And they said, really? And I said, yeah. And they said, wow, that sounds unbelievable. And I said, absolutely. So support your union, folks. Get involved with May Day. And most importantly, keep that subscription up to bloody 3CR, because it really does give a voice to those who don't get a voice. So
all good advice.
Thank you for having me on today. Really, really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks so much for coming onto the show today, and maybe I'll see you on Sunday.
Yeah.
If I do, you're up on stage dancing, okay?
All right. I definitely will be dancing.
Right. Yeah. Come up and say hello, definitely.
Great. All right. Thank you.
See ya.
No worries.
And that was Paulie Stewart from the Painters and Dockers, longtime supporter of workers' struggles here and abroad. Paulie's curating the May Day Solidarity gig for Timor-Leste and Union Aid Abroad at the MUA headquarters, Island Street, West Melbourne, this Sunday after the May Day rally from 3:30 p.m. The ticket, $100 per person, includes food by the Timorese community and drinks by the MUA, beer, wine and soft drinks, and raising funds as a part of their yearly solidarity efforts. For more info on the event, contact the MUA Victorian branch at 03 9329 5477, or head to apheda.org.au to find out more about their work and how you can support it.
Friday, May 1st, is May Day, International Workers' Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got Mayday specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/Mayday2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR.
Mayday all night.
Are you a night owl?
I'm not.
Burning the midnight oil?
Working the night shift?
Or just an insomniac?
For one night only. Talk Back with Attitude is taking your calls.
From 12:30 till 5 a.m.
Friday, May the 1st.
Ring us.
That's, of course, if we survive.
From 12:30 a.m. to 5 a.m.
till we get tired.
Yeah! Mayday.
A special broadcast on 3CR Radio.
For the third year running. The 1st of May.
We have a right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned, stay radical.
Right, you're listening to the Breakfast, Wednesday Breakfast on Radio 3CR. And Wednesday Breakfast, we're very lucky today because we have as a visitor sitting right here in the studio, Len Cooper, who is Secretary of the Melbourne May Day Committee. There's some activity going on, I believe, this weekend with the May Day Committee. Has organised.
Do you want to tell us what the May Day Committee is first?
Sure. Thank you to 3CR yet again for their support. Basically, the May Day Committee is organising the 136th May Day in Melbourne.
Wow.
We're marking May Day with three events. One, an event on Thursday the 30th of April at 5 p.m. at the 8-hour memorial, which is sited opposite the Victorian Trades Hall Council on Victoria Street. The event is to commemorate and pay our respects to the workers in Australia who showed great courage and sacrifice for us all in winning the reduction in working hours from 48 per week to 40 hours per week. Of course, it's been reduced since. And the second event is an international solidarity event at 6 p.m. on Thursday the 30th of April, again, after the 8-hour commemoration in the basement car park area at the Victorian Trades Hall Council. Several speakers will give our solidarity worker struggles taking place in the world. This will be followed by multicultural entertainment and multicultural food delight. And then the third event is the main event, the March Through Melbourne and Other Activities Outside the Victorian Trades Hall Council, beginning at 1 p.m. on Sunday the 3rd of May, with speakers and working class songs, a barbecue and activities for the kids. Then at 2 p.m. the march leaves to head downtown and back to Trades Hall, where there will be the final speakers, more singing and more kids' activities, finishing with the reading and carrying of the May Day Solidarity Resolution for 2026. Again, as I said, the 136th May Day in Melbourne. So finally, I'd just like to say why we should support the May Day activities. May Day is Workers' Day. Each year, May Day supports the struggles of workers and their unions for better wages and conditions, and for the democratic rights to organise and unionise. May Day supports the struggles of our First Nation people. May Day opposes all wars of aggression and demands peace and justice in the world. Every year, May Day organisation brings together workers and their union organisations together and their other community organisations together to demonstrate the range of issues that affect them. So once again, thanks to 3CR for your support, and we'll continue to support 3CR as we've done since the Whitlam days in my memory.
Well, that sounds like such a great array of events you put on the 30th of April and the 3rd of May this year. That's a bit of organising to do. Is the May Day committee part of Trades Hall? Is it formally associated? What's the background of your committee?
No, we're not affiliated with Trades Hall. In fact, we're independent of Trades Hall. The Trades Hall, at a certain stage of its development, going back a number of years now, with earlier and current secretary of the Trades Hall, they've lent resources to May Day to organise, you know, the rally outside Trades Hall and etc. But there's no formal connection between us and Trades Hall, and you know, on many issues we probably have different views.
So you said it was 136 years of May Day. What's changed from, well, not just 136 years ago, but in the years that you've been involved in these?
Well, I think basically it's May Day seems to, in the last few years, seems to be growing each year. Like, for instance, you know, we get a really big turnout of the Palestinian community who support the May Day events, and we give solidarity with them by inviting one of their ranks to speak at the May Day rally about what's happening to their people in the Middle East. And so that, I think that the most significant thing is the growth in the May Day. And we're hoping again for some more growth because of all the issues that we give solidarity to. You know, for instance, we've run campaigns to restore workers' rights in Australia, which is needed desperately, and we'll run campaigns on that more often. So May Day is really part of the workers' movement to eventually get change and establish a socialist system in Australia.
That's a pretty good goal, I reckon. But yeah, I've got the poster in front. You mentioned all the things it stands for, and I mean, surely that's a great centre like magnet for all of these, an important moment. You've got Fight for Australia's Sovereign Independence from the system of imperialism, right? Oppose US domination, cut militarization, what else you got? Solidarity with Gaza and corporate greed, not migrants, is the cause of rising cost of living. So many good issues that you've got there. But I know you're an internationalist. I don't know if you remember. I think the last time I saw you was actually in the 1990s. I used to be, there's a show on 3CR put on by Australia Asia Worker Links. And briefly, when I had the energy at the time, I was in that group.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm interested, maybe the listeners would be interested in what your union history and your history with the 3CR and what motivates you, perhaps. I don't know.
Sure. Yes, that's right. And those days, as you say, AAWL, well, I for many decades, really, I was the secretary of the Communication Workers Union in Victoria. And basically, we used to support AAWL in its solidarity activities with the rest of the world. And I've continued to do that since retiring from the union secretary's job. And part of that has been the May Day Committee to continue that solidarity. So what really motivates me is to continue to work for not only the liberation of the workers in the rest of the world, but also in Australia. So to establish a system where the workers are actually running the country rather than the capitalists.
Hey, yay for that.
And what's the most important message that you want to share with young people or young people who want to get involved in class struggle issues?
Well, I think the message is that we've got to continue to build on solidarity with each other, with each other's struggles. And, you know, the program immediately prior to this on East Timor was an example of what needs to be done on so many fronts. And I think the interesting thing is that, you know, to indicate that we're having, that all of us are having an impact and having success is really the situation in the world today where the big powers that normally cop the do most of the damage to the people's movement are really on the back foot now, and the exposure of imperialism is obvious for all to see.
Yeah,
and so I think that's an indication that the movement for independence and liberation is growing.
Mm. Yeah, with all their resources, with all their control over various media things, they're not doing themselves any favours, are they? People can see, intelligent people can see what they're...
Yes, and more and more people are seeing.
Yeah. So speaking about who speaks and people having a say, so you've got the wreath laying at the 8-hour day monument, yes, as well as the international, the event after that, and the rally. Who are you? Have you got lined up for speaking at those events?
Okay, so for the May Day, we've got someone from the Palestinian Melbourne community who have been brilliantly organising the demonstrations in support of the Palestinian people for, 2-3 years now. So we've got a guest speaker from their organisation. So the Palestinian movement's going to be working hard to build May Day this year. And we've got Shirley Winton from the Anti-AUKUS Committee, who's going to speak on the need to break with the US alliance. We've got people from the public housing movement who are Sandra Gates and Ardu Hani, who are going to talk about public housing and the struggles that are going on at the moment to support the people in the public housing movement.
Mm.
And then we have we're hoping, and we still haven't finalised who it's going to be, we're having someone from the teachers' union to talk about the teachers' union strike that's ongoing. So that's for the actual march and rally. And then for the 8-hour memorial, we've got Giselle Hannah from the CPSU, the new secretary of the CPSU, the public servants. We've got the secretary of the Metal Workers Union. We've got the nurses' secretary, the new nurses' secretary speaking, and someone from the plumbers' union. So they'll be the main speakers for the two events.
All right.
Now there'll be a range of speakers at the International Solidarity Affair, and they're just being finalised at present.
Right. So that's going to be a really worthwhile thing to go to, and remembering, of course, that this city is actually the first place that people acquire the 8-hour day, isn't that right?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, we've got something to be proud of there.
Absolutely. Mm.
Well, that's about all we have time for. Do you want to finish off by reminding listeners on where and when these events are?
Yes, certainly. Thank you. We'd love to remind them. We can never do that too often. So it's the 136 May Day in Melbourne. And we've got the 8-hour memorial event to celebrate the winning of the 40-hour week so long, long ago, a couple of hundred years. That's on Thursday, the 30th of April at 5 p.m. at the at the memorial opposite Trades Hall. We've got an international solidarity event just after that, 6 p.m. on the same day, 30th of April, for a commemoration of basically going to march, well, first of all, to have the solidarity appear, which is going to be a combination of speeches and brilliant multicultural food and brilliant multicultural entertainment. And then the main event, which is the march through Melbourne, downtown, back to Trades Hall, and there'll be several speakers and working class songs and a barbecue and activities for the kids. So,
great.
Amazing.
We're looking for success of those events.
Mm.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Pleasure, and thanks to 3CR yet again for their support.
It's a pleasure.
Hi, my name's Anne, and I think housing is a human right. I think we need to defend public housing as the most important front line in defending that human right for everyone, not just the people who are in public housing today, but for everyone who might need public housing in the future, and for everyone who is in-house.
Hi, I'm Grace, and I'm down here on a Friday night for Honks for Housing. I'm standing up for all my comrades in public housing, everybody who might need it in the future, because everybody deserves better. A house is the most basic human right. It sets us up for success in the future and in, you know, saves people's lives. We need everyone to be able to access the essentials so that we can have a better society in the future.
And you're listening to the Wednesday Breakfast Show, and that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. We were just listening to public housing and ex-residents and supporters of with Rahu at Honks for Housing at the rally and march. And before that, we were speaking with Len Cooper, Secretary of Melbourne May Day Committee, which is on Thursday the 30th and Sunday the 3rd of May. And before that, we were speaking with Paulie Stewart from the band Painters and Dockers about their fundraising gig this Sunday at the MUA after the May Day rally, starting at 3:30 in West Melbourne on Island Street. And to start off the show, we heard firstly with a speech from Mai Saif from Free Palestine Melbourne, and second on the show we had a speech by David Shoebridge at the public forum called War or Public Housing, and I'll see you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.